Well, some of you may be experts in one kind of a plant or another. Maybe it's roses or maybe it's daylilies. Frankly, most of us have a little bit of everything in our gardens and our lawns as well. And we're lucky to have a great group of people with UW Extension, a great group of horticulture educators to help you and to help me, because we don't know everything there is to know, certainly about the plants. And somebody like Patty Nagai does. Patty's a UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County, been a regular guest on our show for quite a while now. Lots of great information to share. You may have a question about one of your plants or maybe more of your plants. I hope you'll call us at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Patty, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I wish I did know everything. That would be fabulous. I don't think my head could be big enough to hold all of the knowledge there is about plants. It's just such an amazing field, and it's always changing.
Yeah.
So I always tell our master gardeners that, you know, that's one of the great things about becoming a master gardener volunteer is that if you love learning, there is always more to learn. And I learn something new every day, so that's good. And yes, I do have I'm at the end of a kind of a cold and a little bit of a funny sounding voice.
Huskier voice today than normal, but
yes, I hope it's understandable.
It definitely is.
Okay, good.
And here we are in the holiday season. Great time of the year. What are some of your favorite holiday plants and why?
You know, I'm a traditionalist in that respect, and I love the poinsettia. I just love it. I love all the cultivars. My favorite will always be the Brilliant Red.
Yeah.
You know, and there are many different cultivars that hold that beautiful red color and those really dark green leaves. That's my favorite. But I like the spotted ones too, you know, the Jingle Bells types that have the white in them. And with some people's decor, a white poinsettia is just fabulous.
Yeah.
And if you're into sports themes, you can always go after the Paxettia, which is the painted poinsettia that is in green and gold. It's very spectacular.
I didn't know. There's a Paxettia.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I don't know if there are any garden centers in the Madison area that do that. But
they're around. Milwaukee area?
Yeah, Menominee Falls.
Oh.
You can get green and gold poinsettias for the holidays for your sports enthusiast.
I am going online to look.
Paxettia.
Paxettia.
Yes, look it up.
Easy enough to
they're beautiful. And, you know, you probably could get them if you're a Bears fan. I'm sure you could get them in Bears colors or Vikings colors. I'm thinking purple would be fabulous too.
Yeah, well, actually, purple would. I'm not really a Viking fan, but the purple would be pretty cool.
I've seen them in that color, and they're painted. You know, that's not a natural color, of course. But we look at poinsettias more or less as a disposable plant over the holidays.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have to be. You can certainly put them in a nice bright window and take good care of them, and you could have a poinsettia for years. In their native environment, they're going to be small trees, so be prepared for a lot of growth, and you need to prune them back on a regular basis. But they're nice to have. But there are lots of other holiday plants, too.
Yeah, well, what are some other good ones?
Well, cyclamen is a favorite of mine to give as a gift plant because it's a little bit easier to care for than the poinsettia. The poinsettia, if you forget to water it,
it's
not very forgiving. You know, it will drop all of its leaves. The cyclamen is a little bit easier to care for, and the flowers on it come in a lot of different colors. They're just spectacular. It's a little bit of a smaller plant, so if you have someone who is a little more space challenged, you know, the cyclamen might be a better option for a gift plant. And then orchids. Orchids are wonderful for gift plants. And despite what many people think, orchids actually are very easy to care for. And they do really well in the home of someone who likes to ignore their plants.
Yeah.
Because orchids need a little bit of a bright light. The common moth orchid that we see, you know, in the grocery store kind of a setting. Those orchids don't require a huge amount of light, bright light, and then very infrequent watering.
Yeah, I have one in my office.
Mm-hmm. And they bloom for so long.
I'm amazed at how long that thing bloomed. Mm-hmm. And it gets no care at all.
Right. And the cyclamen will bloom for a long time also, if you, you know, if you care for it.
And then after the holidays, the cyclamen and the orchids probably are going to hang around better than the poinsettia.
Sure. You can keep a cyclamen going for a very long time. In their natural state, they would go dormant after they finished flowering. But I've had them as houseplants where they've been both producing leaves and flowers for over a year without going dormant.
Wow.
So just depends on how you care for it.
Patty Nagai, our guest, UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. And lots of questions, lots of people calling in. So let's go to the phones and take a question.
Excellent.
Norman in Wausau. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Patty, I have a question for you.
Okay.
It's been an ongoing problem with my citrus plants. They seem to last about 2 to 3 years, and from the time I get them, they seem to go downhill. And I've tried not overwatering them, in other words, making sure that the top couple inches of the soil is dry. I've tried making sure they didn't have any pests. I've succeeded in getting rid of the spider mites and the scale insects.
That's good.
And
why are they dying? I mean, what symptoms are they exhibiting before they croak?
Well, the first thing is they don't seem to want to leaf out real good in the spring and summer like they should, in my opinion.
Okay.
In the fall, now they're covered with blossoms, but those blossoms are drying up and falling off. In other words, they're not
right.
going on to maturity, and the leaves are starting to fall off too.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yes, it does.
And one of them is completely bare. In other words, but it still has a blossom or two on it, but no leaves at all.
Sometimes they do that blossoming as a last ditch effort for reproduction. But hopefully it's still alive. Well, the first thing that I would do is evaluate whether or not you're giving it enough sunlight. You know, the citrus will survive very nicely inside a Wisconsin home, but they need very, very bright light. They can handle direct sun. This is one house plant that I recommend that is taken outside in the summer. And I take mine out in May, usually the 1st of May, because they can handle, you know, 35 to 40 degree temperatures. So I put them outside and I leave them outside until usually mid-October. But I live in southeastern Wisconsin. So, you know, we have a pretty long season where we don't have, you know, too many freezing temperatures.
So, I have them in a sunroom, a big sunroom.
Okay.
Window, and I have a light that's overhead with 5 fluorescent bulbs in it. I think they're probably 60 watts.
Okay. So with the natural light and the addition of the artificial light, it sounds like you probably are giving it enough light. So then the next thing to look at is the root system. And, you know, there's more to it than just watering, although you are correct that watering is very important and very critical, and you definitely don't want to overwater any plants. Citrus are susceptible to root rot, though. So if you're not letting the soil dry out enough in between waterings, you could have a big rotten mess down there on the bottom of the pot. And so it's good to check that top 2 inches of soil, but you really need to be able to establish a watering method that will allow the soil mixture to dry out all the way down to the bottom before you rewater. So you don't want them to wilt, but you know, it would be very unusual to see a lemon tree wilt because they're so waxy-leaved. But when you do water, you want to make sure that you water enough that it drains through the bottom of the pot, and then you want to not water them again. How big are these? Are these like 5 feet?
No, the biggest one is about 3 feet or a little better, and the little ones I just got this spring, they're about a foot high.
Okay, and what size pot are they in?
The little ones are in a 4-inch pot or 5-inch pot, and the big one is in about a 10 or 12-inch pot.
Okay, so that 10 or 12-inch pot, you probably don't need to water that plant but about once every 10 days. But you need to figure out how to best judge whether or not the pot is really dry. The little ones will need to be watered a little bit more frequently than that. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I can suggest is to establish a good fertilization program in the citrus, whether it's lemon or any of those kumquat, satsuma, the mandarins, whatever it is, They do require a little bit heavier fertilization than a lot of the other houseplants because they flower in the winter and then they produce fruit and they should be producing new leaves. So if you've got a plant, any houseplant that's producing new leaves and it's flowering, fruiting, you need to be fertilizing on a regular basis. So find a good quality plant fertilizer for interior flowering plants and use that by the labeled recommendations. Mm-hmm. Okay?
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I want to give Ruth in Whitewater a chance to join in. Hi, Ruth. Ruth, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost Ruth. I was thinking about limey. As we were talking about the lemon tree, because limey is doing really, or my lime tree is doing.
Yes, I saw pictures of him on Facebook.
Really doing well, cranking out the, and we're giving limey just the fish.
The fish emulsion is a great fertilizer to use for citrus. They like that a lot. There are also some acidifying kinds of fertilizers. If you look carefully, you can find a fertilizer that's for fruit trees, you know, that's for citrus. And it tends to be a little bit more acidic. You know, the fertilizers are very, there are some that are general plant foods, you know, they're general kind of houseplant fertilizers.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to take care of a plant that's actively producing flowers, you want to find a fertilizer that has the ratio of nutrients that will help support that flowering.
Got it.
And so it's really important to select the right fertilizer.
Rose in Wittenberg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have three Jerusalem cherry plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had them for many, many years. I keep mowing them down and repotting them, and they cherry practically all year long.
Wow.
But I do have a problem with the white flies on them.
White flies are horrible.
I have many other plants, and they don't attack anything except the Jerusalem cherry.
Yeah, you know, Jerusalem cherries and everything in that Solanaceae family, the white flies just love them. They love it. They also like really succulent flowering plants like the Gerber daisies. There's just something in the foliage that really attracts white flies. And once they start feeding on it and they're getting the nutrients they need, they proliferate really quickly. And so if you look on the undersides of the leaves, you'll see lots of little baby white flies, and then you touch the plant and they all fly around and drive you crazy. So you're going to have to go after them with kind of a multi-pronged approach. So you can use the little white fly traps that you can buy at almost any garden center. And those are the little yellow cards, and they need to be yellow because white flies are attracted to yellow. And then they're coated with this incredibly sticky glue. And you can either put them on a stick and put them in the soil, or they might come with a little hanger and you can hang them from the branches of the Jerusalem cherry. And you can use as many of those as you like. They're non-toxic. I do caution you that if you're watering your plant and you bend over, you definitely don't want to get these in your hair.
Oh, or the cat.
Or if you have pets, you want to make sure they're up high enough that they don't get stuck to your pets, because they are very sticky and not fun to get out of your hair. And I speak from personal experience, so we just don't want to go there. Avoid that at all costs. But they work really well to catch those adults.
Good.
But it's probably not going to be enough to really control the insect. It will help, but it's not going to control it. When you're talking about interior plants, you have to be really careful about the products that you use so that you're not creating a toxic environment in your house. And a lot of things are not labeled for interior use. So whichever product you select, you need to make sure it's labeled for interior use. There are some spray products that contain pyrethrums that are labeled for interior. There are products that contain imidacloprid, which is a systemic insecticide that can go in the soil, and those are labeled for interior use. And then you have a whole variety of oils and insecticidal soaps that work really well on whitefly as long as you're willing to do it on a regular basis. But to do that, you're going to have to take the plant and put it in a bathtub or a shower stall or something so that you're not spraying this stuff all over you know, your house. So you have to be able to control it. But if you pick one of those products, just one, and then the whitefly traps, those little cards, and follow the label directions, and keep up with it on a regular basis, you should be able to control them after a while. But it'll take a while.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Rose.
Okay, thank you so much.
Appreciate your call. Eric in Endeavor. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry, I'm so excited. This is the best day ever. I'm so happy to talk to Patty, who knows everything, although she's so humble about it.
I really don't know everything, but thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
You're going to ask me something I don't know now. I know that's what you're going to do.
I think I have a simple question. I just don't know much. So I live in a small village in South Central Wisconsin, and I have the nosiest neighbors you've ever seen in your life. I'm curious about what to plant and when to plant it for some, it's a lot cheaper than building a privacy fence. I would like to just build some barrier plants somewhere between me and my neighbors.
Some barrier plants. How tall do you have to go?
Like 8 feet would be fantastic in the next few years. I'm not expecting a miracle tomorrow morning. But,
oh, wow. Okay. So you're looking at more of a permanent planting as opposed to a planting that would be seasonal, you know, like a vine.
Well, I'll take what I could get.
Okay. Well, you know, to provide a visual barrier, the fastest growing thing to use that's fairly inexpensive and works really well are the various arborvitaes that are for screening. I mean, they're a perfect plant for that because they are evergreen. They're not horribly expensive. You can buy a fairly large one so you don't have to wait 10 years for it to grow up. And you can prune them. You cannot prune them. You know, they're pretty hardy, so they're pretty tough plants. The one that works really well for screening is called Techny, T-E-C-H-N-Y, and that's a cultivar name of arborvitae.
Okay.
And that works really well. But, you know, if you just plant a whole bunch of arborvitae, it's going to look like you're deliberately planting a wall. And maybe that's what you want. I don't know. But for screening, I often like to recommend that you plant a variety of things so that it looks like you are deliberately planting a beautiful shrub bed. Okay? So that it doesn't look like you're planting.
I prefer that. I don't want to, you know, I got some no man's land I could do whatever I want with, but I prefer to make it look nice in my neighborhood.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's good. So you can think of the arborvitae, or you could intermix it with some other evergreens. There are some lovely soft blue junipers that also look nice with the arborvitaes that you could use. You know, you could plant maybe three arborvitaes and one of these junipers, or three junipers or something like that. And you could come up with a design that is very beautiful for the kind of that background. But then plan on planting some deciduous shrubs mixed in with maybe a few other evergreens in front of it so that it doesn't look so wallish, especially from your side. You know, you want it to look really pretty. And then if you allow enough space in front of that, it gives you plenty of room to plant bulbs and perennials and annuals or anything else. So you have, think about it in layers. So, and think about it as you are going to view it. But as far as the background piece, those soft blue junipers and the arborvitae are a great option for creating a living evergreen kind of a hedge.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Thanks, Eric. And we have some open lines. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your questions or comments or even our photos on my Facebook page as well. Maybe you've got some plant photos you want our guest Patty Nagai to see. I'm Larry Mueller. Carol Christensen, our on-air producer today, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting a little about holiday plants and other plants as well with our guest Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, and always great to have her along to talk with you and with me. She knows a lot. And Lori in Germantown just phoned in a few minutes ago, so let's talk to Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I've got two plants. One, or both potted. One's a rosemary plant, and it was outside all summer, and it grew great. And I was going, never lasts through the winter anyway, so I really didn't care about it. And I brought it into the garage. I was going to kind of slowly transition it into the house, but never got around to it. So it's out there petrified, frozen. But it's still very, very green. And I was wondering, I figured I would just leave it out there and use it as is, because I'm thinking if I bring it into the house, it's just going to drop all its needles immediately and dry up.
I'm assuming your garage is not heated. You have an unheated garage, yeah.
It's frozen.
Well,
it's petrified. Should I just leave it there and just let nature take its course and use the leaves as is, or should I try to bring it in? And
well, it's up to you. If you leave it out in your garage, it's not going to survive out there, and it may already be gone. You know, because I know how cold my garage is, and we've had a couple of nights where my husband had a little bit of beer stored out there, and it. It froze.
Oh no.
I'm thinking that, and that was on the warm wall, you know, the wall that
disaster.
Usually things don't freeze on. So I'm thinking, you know, that you know, you probably have gotten down to below 10 degrees, if not lower, in your garage. And so the rosemary just cannot survive that kind of temperature. So chances are it is dead. So what I would recommend that you do, if you want to use the rosemary, or if you want to harvest the rosemary, there's no sense in waiting to do that, because it's only going to deteriorate in flavor. You should just go ahead and harvest it, rinse it off, and either pull the leaves off and finish drying them, or freeze them, or however you're going to preserve the herb. I don't know that you'll be able to use the rosemary spears, you know, like to do shish kebab, because I think the leaves are probably all going to fall off as soon as you bring it into the house. But I guess you could still use the stems. But what you could do is you could go ahead and cut it back, harvest the rosemary. You could bring the pot inside and put it in a bright window, water it, and see what happens. You know, if it did not totally freeze, it might come back. You know, it's just
give it a try anyway.
Just a chance. Now, you also said you had a question about basil.
Yes, the basil plant. It was a goner. It just died outside, and a lot of the leaves stayed on and just hung there, and they're all dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Can I use those
as
dried in a recipe?
Sure, as long as you don't have any male dogs that have been around. You know. Visiting them.
No.
Yeah. No, they'd be fine. They've just consider them freeze dried herbs and they should be fine. Basil, however, you can grow that inside. It's so easy to grow from seed. So if your plant had produced seed, you could still collect the seed and plant it in a pot in a bright window, and you might be able to grow some more basil in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Well,
you're
thanks,
welcome.
All right. And I am here to tell you that this morning on my kitchen table, I picked up out of a bowl a cherry tomato from our garden. I am still eating tomatoes from our garden. These were all...
How is that possible?
These were all green.
Oh, yeah.
We brought them in and put them in a bowl, and I still have probably 20 tomatoes yet?
Wow. That's a long time. I would think that they would be done by now, but...
I was amazed. Yeah. And Renee used a batch the other day when she was making some sauce.
And how was the flavor?
Not as good. Not as good.
More like the grocery store ones.
Yeah, more like the grocery store ones. Mm-hmm.
That happens when you pick green. I mean, it's a great thing to do, though, at the end of the season, to pick all of those green fruits before we have a freeze. And then bring them inside, because they will continue to ripen. The flavors are not quite as enhanced as they would be, of course, if you had summer sun and all of that.
But we had some friends over about 3 weeks ago, and the guy came in and he said, "I'm going immediately to your kitchen." He went to the kitchen. He said, "Because you said that you were still eating tomatoes from your garden, and I don't believe you." And he goes in, he said, "Oh my gosh, you still got all those tomatoes." I said, "I was not lying."
That is
Leroy. Oh, so I just wanted to see. I thought, well, it's a garden talk day. I'm going to eat a little tomato, and then I can talk about it on the air.
About how you still are enjoying the fruits of your labor. And then you tell us about your limes on your lime tree.
Cheryl in Cecil, Wisconsin. Enough about me. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just had an interesting thing to tell her. I wondered if she ever saw a jade tree bloom.
Yes, I have. It's spectacular. Do you have one blooming?
Yes, and I've had the plant over 20 years.
Longevity is important in getting a jade plant to bloom, yes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. How big is it?
Good. Oh, this one has to be about 3.5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
It's really funny. People often have houseplants, various types of tropical, semi-tropical houseplants that they just, they love them for the foliage, and they don't even think about the fact that all plants bloom at some point. So all of those things that we normally don't see in bloom, like the Sansevieria, the mother-in-law's tongue, that has a really cool blossom also.
Is that right?
But the jade plant, it seems to be long, the age of the plant, as well as the condition, of course. You're obviously taking good care of it, and you've got it in a really happy place. And so when plants are in a happy place and they reach sexual maturity, they're going to flower.
It's just amazing. After 20 years, it was such a surprise.
Yeah.
Do they have a scent?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't recall them. I've never had one bloom, but I've seen several in blossom, and they were really large. One of them was in a greenhouse, and it was probably about 6 feet tall.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was covered in blossoms, and I don't recall it having a scent. But it was really, it's kind of funny looking because, of course, the leaves are so thick and fleshy, and the flower is kind of a delicate little thing.
It doesn't look like it belongs there.
No, it doesn't. It looks like somebody attached fake flowers to it.
Exactly. No, it's just a little pink, kind of frothy looking bunch.
It looks very much, have you ever seen a Hoya bloom? The vine, the Hoya? The bloom on the jade plant looks kind of like the Hoya bloom. But the Hoya bloom is very fragrant.
Hmm.
Some people don't like way it smells.
It doesn't smell at all, but it's such a lovely surprise.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
I have actually 3 jade trees that are almost 20 years old. So
wow.
And it's almost like you're the guardian of the jade trees.
And I bet you share pieces of them with other people, don't you?
Oh, my goodness. Everybody I know has one, yes.
That's the
cool.
Fabulous thing about jade plants. They're a very giving plant.
Do you have a photo? Have you taken a photo, Cheryl?
Of the flower?
Yeah.
I tried. I can try again. The first one I took didn't turn out so good because I was I was sending it to the friends that I know of, to tell them about it.
Well,
I can take another one.
Take another one and send it to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show so we can all see what they look like.
Okay.
That would be fabulous.
I would love that. Thank you, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I appreciate the call. Wow. Flowering jade. I can't, that's one I can't brag about. That's.
Oh, next year this time, you're going to have a jade plant in your house that's flowering. I know you will.
Oh, man. Jamie in West Allis. Your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard you earlier referencing the Volunteer Master Gardening Program. I'm wondering if you could please tell me how I could go ahead and become involved in that.
You're in West Allis, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so you're in Milwaukee County, and Milwaukee County has a really large Master Gardener volunteer program. I believe they have the largest in the state. It's called the Southeast Wisconsin Master Gardeners. And Sharon Morrissey is the horticulture educator in Milwaukee County, and then she runs that program jointly with Ann Weed out of Waukesha County. And so it's a two-county program. They offer training. Let's see, did they just finish training? I think they just finished their
one session
training, or is she still doing it in the spring? I'm not sure. She switched to fall, but she may have switched back to spring. So you can go to the Milwaukee County Extension website and get current information on when her next class is going to be offered. So to become a Master Gardener volunteer, you must take the level one training class. You don't have to take it in Milwaukee County, but if you're going to be volunteering and you live in Milwaukee County, it makes sense to take it there. It will either be taught at the Milwaukee County Extension office, which is on the county grounds near Frederick Hospital, or sometimes it's offered at Berner Botanical Gardens. But it will always be taught by UW Extension. You must take that class to start, and then you have to do, in Milwaukee County, 36 hours of volunteer service on an approved Master Gardener project. And there are many projects across that Milwaukee, Waukesha.
Fun projects.
Oh, they have probably 60 projects that their Master Gardener volunteers work on. And they are wonderful community service projects that really make a difference in people's lives. It's more than just a beautification thing. You know, Master Gardener volunteers all over the state work to help feed the hungry. They teach kids about healthy gardening practices, about healthy eating. They teach environmental stewardship. I mean, it's an amazing program, and the volunteers are just simply
wonderful people,
fabulous in the work that they do around the state. So it's wonderful that you are interested in this, and I hope you continue to pursue it.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's what I'm going to do. Thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. You're going to love those people. I love working with them, Jamie. Louie in Chippewa Falls, we are to you now. Hi, Louie.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 23-year-old plus crocus plant. It's like 7 feet wide, a little over 4 feet tall. It's taken up my whole window in the living room. I can't even see out it. But I was wondering about fertilizing it. What should I do there?
I'm wondering, I have a question about the name that you're calling it, because a crocus is a bulb that grows outside and only grows in the spring, and then it goes dormant. So the crocus is the small bulb that grows, and it flowers either yellow or bluish purple, and then it often is flowering when the snow is out. And then it goes away, and it won't come back until the next spring. So I'm wondering if you have something else. Can you describe your plant to me?
Well, it's smaller than like an elephant leaf thing, but it's the same shape, basically smaller. It's got yellow veins in it, and then it's reddish. It's got reddish coloring to it, tips.
But does it look like an elephant ear plant?
Somewhat, yes. Quite similar.
Do you think it's a colocasia?
Somebody told me it was a crocus, but I didn't know what it was.
No, it's not a crocus, for sure.
No, I bet it's a colocasia. So that's colocasia. And there are several different genera that make up that elephant ear family. So if it has that same kind of growth habit, and looks sort of like an elephant ear, but has different colors in it, I'm thinking it might be a colocasia. There's another, you know, there's several of them. But if it's in that family, if that's what it is that you're growing, that is also grows from an underground structure called a corm, a very large structure. And so it's a funny plant because it can actually grow in water, and in a lot of cultures they grow plants like that for food, and so they cultivate them in water and then they harvest them, and it takes special preparation in order to eat them because they've got some nasty little crystals in them. But growing it as a house plant, it sounds like you're doing a good job if you've got it that big and you've been able to maintain it. It typically will put out new growth in the spring, and so this is a houseplant that I would recommend that you not fertilize until maybe into February, first part of March. And then it will need some fertilization. Do you put it outside in the summer?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
It's now a tree,
And I'm still wondering if we have the right plant.
Man, can you take a picture of that and send it in, Louis?
I'll figure out how to do it on my phone here. I got a new phone, but I will. What is that, to the Larry Mueller?
Larry Mueller Show.
The Larry Mueller mm-hmm. Show.
Is it spelled M-E-L-L-E-R?
It's M-E-I-L-L-E-R, and it's The Larry Mueller Show. I have a personal Facebook page. This is Larry Mueller, but this is the Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got a smartphone, you should be able to take the picture, and then right on that mm-hmm. spot where the picture is, there'll be a little icon probably, and you can click on that, and it'll give you an option of going to a Facebook page or an email or whatever, and click on the Facebook page and write in the Larry Mueller Show, and it should go.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we're talking about the right plant, and so it's hard to give recommendations, you know, without knowing exactly what it is.
So if you can do that, then...
It has 7 or 8 inch, like, pestles hanging down, and it's got seeds.
Wow.
You know, like a whole...
Well, that doesn't sound like a colocasia either, then.
No. So... You've got, Louis, you've got to send the picture.
Wow, I'm...
Okay.
I need to see this plant.
Yeah, we want to see it, so send a picture.
I will do. I'll put something by it so you reference the size.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Good idea. Sounds interesting. Thank you for calling.
We'll be eager to see it. Thanks, Louis. He'll send it along. I'm sure of that. Our guest, Patty Nagai, is just as eager as I am to see it. Patty's a UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. And you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, UW Extension horticulture educator. Question for her about your plants? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or a question, comment there. Love to hear from you. Gloria in Genesee, Wisconsin, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about amaryllis.
Okay.
You know, when I first started buying them about 10 years ago, I had no problem. The bulbs put forth usually at least 2 stems with 3 flowers on each stem,
right.
Sometimes more stems,
mm-hmm.
and I had no problem putting them outside and bringing them back in and letting them rest and mm-hmm. growing. But somehow, the ones I buy now put out 1 pathetic stem with 3 flowers, but not so spectacular like they used to be. And then in the fall, when they're supposed to be dying off, they're putting out green leaves. I mean, I'm totally confused about this.
Amaryllis are a funny plant, I tell you. And I read all of the experts' advice on how to grow amaryllis and how to dry them down and let them go dormant. And I have found with my own, and I have a bunch of them up in my bedroom because that way nobody can see them when they're going through their ugly period. But when they bloom, it's just fabulous. But I just let them do whatever they want to do. And I don't repot them because I learned the hard way that if you repot them, they don't flower. And this is one, if you're buying new amaryllis every year, this is a case where size really does matter. And so you need to buy a bigger bulb if you want more stems and more flowers per stem and more, you know, just an overall better looking flower arrangement. The bigger the bulb, the more stems and the more flowers. There are also newer cultivars that produce more flowers per stem. But you can pay a really premium price for these bulbs. You know, if you're buying really inexpensive bulbs,
Yeah.
You know, like $4, $5, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect a whole lot of show from those. But if you're able to keep them growing for several years, you know, they will get bigger and they will produce more flowers. But they don't like to be repotted. They like to be in a pot that is like, it looks like they shouldn't possibly fit in that pot. They like to be very pot bound. They like I said, they don't like to be repotted. They don't like to have a lot of room in the pot. They don't like to be overwatered. And if you just let them do their thing kind of naturally and keep up with your watering and your fertilization, but don't overwater them, you know, they generally will flower for you around Valentine's Day. And if you just let them go, I mean, they will do that for years and years and years. And every year they get prettier and bigger and more spectacular. But if you're buying new ones and you want a really pretty show, or if you're buying one to give as a gift plant over the holidays, it really pays to buy a bigger bulb. And you might pay $15 or $20 for it.
Yes.
But it will be spectacular.
Yeah, they're beautiful when they're...
One more thing. What is the fertilizer, and when would I be doing the fertilizing?
Well, you know, amaryllis fall into that bulb category. So a lot of the bulb, fertilizers are really nice to use for that, you know, for that particular plant. But you can also use any flowering plant fertilizer. And the time that you want to fertilize is when the leaves are first coming out of the bulb, and it's you know, like 2 to 3 inches. You'd want to fertilize then, and then you wait until the leaves are maybe 8 inches, 6 to 8 inches, and then you fertilize again. And then you can fertilize again once the flowers are gone, because the energy from those leaves that are in existence throughout flowering and after flowering are the ones that are going to go back to replenish the bulb for the next flowering season.
Okay.
So, you know, at least three times.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. All right, so we have a couple of things on Facebook. One, Bob sends a photo of his dwarf jade tree that blooms every year on the bottom. Look at the blooms on that, Patty. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it doesn't even look like a jade. It's so funny. The flowers on the jade, I mean, they're like panicles, and they're tiny little white flowers, and so it looks... It doesn't look like a jade plant anymore, but it's really pretty. So if you're on Facebook, you should go look at that picture. It's just beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing.
I'm going to give you another microphone as well, so you can...
So I don't have to wheel around.
So you don't have to wheel around so much, and now you have another mic, because Kim says her dad has this. I'm not close enough to see what plant it is. It's spindly.
It looks like a geranium. Is it a geranium?
You know, I bet it is.
A very spindly geranium?
Yeah.
The flower looks like a geranium. It's kind of hard to tell about the leaves, and it definitely has developed a nice stem. I'm going to go back over here. I like this microphone better. So geraniums inside are really interesting because, you know, in other parts of the world, oh, there's the poinsettia.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Kelly.
That's the poinsettia. It's a beautiful plant.
But back to the other.
I'm just in awe of the green and gold. I can't help myself. So when you bring geraniums inside, geraniums in other climates would be perennial, and they will develop in a kind of a semi-woody structure, and they get they get kind of leggy and gangly and everything. So if you're trying to grow a geranium as a perennial inside, you really need to keep it pruned back in order to keep a decent shape to it. Otherwise, its natural tendency is to get really tall and leggy. And it does have a couple of flowers on it, which is kind of cool. But if you want it to look better, pruning is your answer, as well as, once again, fertilizing with a plant fertilizer that is meant for flowering plants.
Here's Darren with, Shelley's Christmas cactus. Now look at that one.
Wow. That is spectacular. That is beautiful.
I have not seen one like that before.
Yes. That...
like a tree.
Well, I think it's on a plant stand.
Oh!
Those are not stems, Larry. Those would be the legs of a table.
That would be the leg of a table that I'm looking at, and not the stem.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my goodness
But
me.
That is a beautiful
it
one.
It is beautiful.
So the difference between a Thanksgiving cactus and a Christmas cactus is the Thanksgiving cactus has a slightly different kind of flower, and it tends to be a little more angular in growth, whereas the Christmas cactus tends to be much more pendulous. And so that one definitely looks like a Christmas cactus. You can have both of them blooming at the same time. They're different species. They're not the same plant. But they can bloom at the same time, although the Thanksgiving cactus tends to bloom about 30 days before the Christmas cactus, which is why it would be the Thanksgiving cactus.
We've got two different messages, one from Keith and one from Andy on Facebook. And they both say that person who was earlier called and we were trying to figure out what the plant was, they say it's a croton.
Well, you know, I thought about croton, and
croton,
then
yeah.
croton, and then I, when he said that the ears looked like elephant ears, that threw me off. But that did cross my mind that it could be a croton. So a croton has more of a woody stem. It has leaves that can be almost any color, or mottled colors, kind of a spotted, irregularly colors. You know, they can be yellow, white, pink, red, green. I mean, they come in all different colors. And the more light a croton gets, the more colorful it will be. And it will get fairly large. I've never seen one flower. And then he was talking about these seed pods hanging down, which is entirely possible because if it's that big, you know, it may be flowering and producing seeds. But I've never seen a croton bloom or produce seeds, so I'm not familiar with that. But it might be a croton.
Hopefully he'll get a photo up for us to look at. Shannon in Kenosha, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So the week after Christmas, my husband and I are moving out to California, and we are wondering how to transport our houseplants.
Oh.
Well, you may need to find a home for your houseplants here in Wisconsin, because I believe that it's against the law to transport any live plants into the state of California.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, I don't think you can cross the state line with any live plants, and they will ask you that question. They will ask, you know, if you've got them in your car or in your moving van. If you get stopped anywhere along the way, they may ask you that. Now, I know people who have moved plants into California and have done it the appropriate way. They've called the Department of Agriculture. You have to pay for an inspection of the plants to get a tag saying that they're insect and disease free before you bring them in. But if you consider the level of agriculture in the state of California, you know, they're very, very careful about what comes in. You know, when you, it's funny because I have relatives in California and I'm always bringing stuff back to Wisconsin, and they always look at me funny and go, "You can take that back into Wisconsin? Really? But that's a live plant, or those are, you know, live seeds or cuttings or whatever." Like, yes, I can do that, because if there's some insect or disease on this plant, it's not going to live in Wisconsin. I'll be lucky if I can give this plant to live, much less any of those diseases that you might have here. It's not like we have a big citrus industry here in Wisconsin, although listening to Larry, you would think we did. So, you know, in the long run, it might be simpler and more cost effective and safer for you to plan on purchasing new houseplants when you get to California.
Yeah.
You could call the Department of Ag and double check on that, but I'm pretty sure it's against the law to take them into California.
Very, very good to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And boy, Randy in Grafton, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I think I just learned something I didn't know before. I thought I had a Christmas cactus. Maybe I have a Thanksgiving cactus.
You may.
But I'm a retired fifth grade teacher, and years ago, one of my kids gave me this beautiful I thought it was a Christmas cactus, and I've got all brown thumbs, and my girlfriend once said to me, "Well, I see you like to experiment in drought," so I did not think this Christmas cactus would live. Well, it has bloomed beautifully every year, but usually in November.
Yes.
We just did a remodel downstairs, and the cactus is in a different place now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not blooming, not even looking like it wants to bloom.
Mm.
So do I change its soil? Do I feed it something? I've still neglected it just the same.
They actually, these are plants that generally thrive on neglect, but they like to be in the right place when they're neglected. So
yeah.
That's kind of key. So they both the Christmas and the Thanksgiving cactus depend on day length to flower. So in your new location, if it's getting a lot of artificial light at night, it won't set flower buds. And so the Thanksgiving cactus blooms about 30 days earlier than the Christmas cactus, but those flower buds are set, you know, towards the end of summer. So they need a period of time where they have just natural light and no artificial light at night. And if they get artificial light, they don't set flower buds. It may still flower. In fact, generally both of them flower again around March because they just like winter weather. Don't overwater it. If you've got it in a kind of a sandier soil, that's good. They do like to be fertilized every now and then, but they're not real picky. They don't like to be moved. They will drop their flower buds very readily if they're moved after the flower buds have set. So you have to be very careful about that. But the biggest thing is light.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, here we are. Patty Nagai, our UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. She's been with us. I don't know, how many times have you been on for?
I don't know.
Lots of
over
time.
A period of years.
Over many. She looks so young to have been on for so many years. But it's great to have her along. And, of course, she's the Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. And great to have you listening in on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Growing plants, whether indoors or out, really helps to connect us with nature, I think, anyway. And as you look out over a very wintry white landscape, I think it can help us appreciate how incredibly hardy those plants are to be able to stand up to a Wisconsin winter. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along as we visit today with Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. Lots of great information to share. And Patty, thanks again.
You're very welcome. I enjoy being on your show.
It's great. And we have a publication we want to give some copies away, something that you put together, or you edited, Community Crops, or Common Crops for Community Gardens.
Right.
This from the Cooperative Extension Office, the Learning Store, shared several copies, and we're going to share them with our listeners. It's Common Crops for Community Gardens. Again, we have 14 copies to give away.
It's a wonderful publication. This publication was written by Kristen Krokowski, the educator out of Waukesha County. And it's a really fabulous, down-to-earth, basic kind of description of some common crops that are grown or could be grown in community gardens. But it's also applicable to home gardens as well. Lots of nice little tips and tricks on growing these different crops. And it's part of a bigger series called People Plus Plants. We have about 8 publications currently, and when we're finally done with it, we'll have about 13 or 14 publications. Videos, you can also visit us on the website, the People Plus Plants website, mm-hmm. through UW Extension. And we have a lot of really nice publications in the series, but this one is really fun. This Common Crops publication has some really good practical advice for gardeners.
So if you're one of the first 14 to either call or email, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's a normal number, 1-800-642-1234, and ask for it. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And in the word, put the, in the subject line, put the word giveaway in the subject line. You have to include your name and mailing address to be considered. And we'll give these out to the first 14 people who call or email. So, again, that's a copy of the Extension Learning Store booklet, Common Crops for Community Gardens. Call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org and put the word giveaway in the subject line, and the first 14 people will mail you a free copy. So looking forward to getting those out. Bill in Oshkosh, Thank you so much for waiting. It is your turn. Hi.
I had a comment about the jade, the flowering jade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I've had my jade blooming for a long time, but I've observed a couple things that I think are important if you want your jade to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's got to be out in full sun sometime. I live on the lake, and I have a eastern exposure, and it's interesting. If I have my jade in my screen porch
mm-hmm.
that faces east, it doesn't bloom.
It doesn't get enough light. Mm-hmm.
I think it's the filtered light.
Right.
Yes. But what I've observed is if I put it, when I bring it out, I bring it in from the shade out into the sun gradually, because mm-hmm. otherwise the leaf will burn.
Right.
And if I have it out and it looks like it's in full sun, and it is, but only partially, this is just eastern sun, the half of it will bloom, which gets enough sun, and the other half won't.
Hmm.
So I think the secret is not the age of the jade as much as it is that it gets a fair amount of sun exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bet probably 2 or 3 hours is all it needs, because that's all my plant gets.
Wow.
Some of the eastern exposure. And that really works.
Huh. That's great to know. And I assume that light is very critical for getting plants to flower. And in some cases, it's not just the quantity of light, but it could be the quality of light. So east light is very different from full sun or western light. The quality of that light is very different.
So much better.
And then also with some plants like the Christmas cactus and the Thanksgiving cactus and the Easter cactus, it's day length that's really important, and the poinsettia as well. But I still I've never seen a small jade plant flower.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I think that they have to be a certain size before they will be able to initiate flower buds.
Well, let me tell you about my jade.
How big is it?
I've had it, the original jade I've had for 40 years.
Oh, good gracious.
But there's more to it than that. Because I got it from the horticulturist at the Payne Art Center in Oshkosh.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he was pruning the jade that he had. It was huge.
Yes.
And he said, "Here, take this bill and just let it seal for a day or for 24 or 40 hours, and just stick it in the dirt."
Yep.
And that's all you have to do.
Right.
And well, with mine, when it gets too big, I just
whack it off. Yes.
Stick it back in the ground.
Right.
So that my current one, the original plant may be 40 years old.
Right.
But it's only been in the ground for 10, probably.
Yeah.
Because I've whacked it and put it back in. But it's probably an older branch.
Yeah.
But it isn't the original plant.
Right, right. Do all of your cuttings bloom?
What I do is, I can't tell you that, because I usually, when I whack them down, I just put enough for one pot, because I don't need a whole bunch.
Oh, okay.
My plant now maybe is 3 foot tall and 3 foot wide.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good size plant.
Yeah. But it gets much bigger than that.
Oh, it will. It'll become a tree if you let it.
I'll have to whack it back down. Because, if they keep growing, they kind of lose their shape. They get tall.
Yeah.
So that they get more leggy.
Right. And the other problem with jade is they get older and bigger, and if they are interior plants, which of course in Wisconsin during at least part of the year they have to be interior plants, they can't always support their weight. And so, they typically are plants that fall over. They get top heavy, which is why one of the reasons I recommend potting them in a sandy soil mixture with a clay pot, so that they've got some base weight to them. But also those branches get kind of fragile, and so they break really easily. Now, in their natural environment, they don't break quite so readily.
Hmm. There we go. Bill, thank you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing, Bill.
Really appreciate it. We have Chris in Stockbridge, I believe, up next. Hi, Chris.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon, I should say.
Good afternoon.
I have a maidenhair fern that I bought several years ago. It was a tiny plant, about 6 inches high in a 2-inch pot. And I have cared for it, nursed it, I fed it, watered, I potted it up as necessary. It got huge and absolutely beautiful. And I guess it was in October, I decided it needed to be repotted and that it probably needed a deeper pot for the root system. And from there, it has been absolutely downhill. It's almost gone.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I don't know if I can. I mean, here and there, there's little fronds coming up.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what I did wrong. Does it need a special potting soil?
What kind of soil did you put it in?
Well, it was just from my bag of soil that I used to fill my outside pots this last spring.
Oh, was it real soil or was it potting mix with peat moss in it?
It was like a potting mix, I think.
Okay. So there's a huge difference between, you know, the different kinds of soil or soilless mixes that you can get at the garden center. So soil is very, very heavy and doesn't always work so great in containers unless you mix a lot of other stuff in with it. But if you used a soilless potting mix, which is very light, and you'll see it's, in fact, there's no soil in it at all. It's just peat moss. It'll be vermiculite or perlite. Sometimes it has compost in it. Sometimes it has little bits of pine bark in it, but there's no soil in it. So it's very, very lightweight and very well drained, but it has a high organic matter. So those high organic matter, well-drained soils work well for most houseplants, which would include the ferns. You know, the ferns like, you know, they're funny. I mean, they like a lot of moisture, but they don't like to be waterlogged. And so if you used a heavy soil, you may have introduced some root rots into the root system, you know, because you've used a soil that doesn't have a lot of air space in it. And so then when you water it, you get waterlogged and you lose your oxygen that should be available to the roots. So even plants that like a lot of moisture still need air in the root zone. And it sounds like, you know, your plant may be suffering from overwatering, but it might not be because you actually watered it too much. It might be because your soil is not correct. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That's probably exactly what happened because it was just so magnificent. Everybody commented the first thing they walked in the door, and I just couldn't believe after all these years it had grown so well that it would just go downhill so fast.
Yeah. Well, you could take it out of the pot and check out that root system and see if you've got any living roots in there. And so what you're looking for are roots that are not brown and slimy.
Yeah.
you know, you're looking for some new white or light tan kind of growth. And if you've got good roots still, it's possible that you could save it by putting it in a smaller pot with a nice, well-drained, sterile potting mix that has no real soil in it, but has that peat moss in it.
Kind of get rid of those slush.
Yeah. And then in addition, if you find out that there are very few roots left in there, you've got a little bit of foliage.
Yes, I do have a couple of little fronds that are poking up.
So the other thing you can do is give it more like a nursery kind of an atmosphere and put the whole pot inside of a large, like a Ziploc bag that's clear. Punch a few holes in it because you don't want it to be completely sealed. You want a little bit of air exchange, but you want to preserve the humidity. So you water it one time, and then you don't water it again, but you put it in that bag so that it maintains a really high humidity. And then put it in a bright location, but not direct sun, because you don't want to burn it or heat it up. And then just wait and see if you get some new fronds coming out.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I forgot to mention. I should have mentioned this right away. It took about 1 minute. To get all the 14 callers for the Common Crops for Community Garden publication. So gone in about a minute.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we...
That's so exciting.
Yeah. Didn't take long.
So those of you who didn't get the publication, you can order it from the Learning Store, learningstore.uwex.edu, or you can read it online. You can go online and read the publication. It's a really nice publication.
Kim on Facebook said, I had a large chocolate mint plant growing outside all summer. Mm-hmm. Decided to bring it indoors just as it reached freezing outside. As soon as I brought it in, of course, it began to dry up, shed leaves. I've tried trimming off the dead branches and repotting it, but it's still looking sad. I thought mint was resilient. What did I do wrong? Probably nothing.
Nothing. You know, it's meant, you know, it may be the time that you transplanted it. It may have been a little bit too late in the season. One of the things that you can do with mints, you know, when you find a variety of mint that you really like, and there's some really cool ones out there, the pineapple mint and the chocolate mint and really nice, nice, flavorful and very fragrant mints. Instead of trying to dig up the whole plant and transplanting it, you can take cuttings and just remove the leaves from the bottom half of the cutting. You make cuttings about 8 inches long, remove the leaves from the bottom, put it in some water, and it roots really easily. And you can better control what you're bringing into your house, because a lot of times when you try to transplant and you're bringing in garden soil, you're also bringing in a lot of insects and diseases and who knows what. Yeah. I've heard about people bringing in little snakes.
Oh, my goodness.
All sort of exciting things that come out of the pots at night. So you don't really want to do that. But if you have any live growth, you know, on the plant, you could try to take cuttings off of it right now, as opposed to, you know, spending a whole lot of time trying to save the whole plant, because it may be that the roots were too damaged, or you've got too much water in there, or the soil has got a disease issue or something that you've brought in with the plant. So I would recommend trying to make cuttings. If you want to save the whole plant, you need to probably repot it with a really nice clean potting soil and get rid of as much of that garden soil as possible.
All right. We have some more photos. And remember that geranium earlier?
Yes. It looks sort of like a
Kim wonders if you can
Ikebana.
Yeah.
Ikebana geranium. It's got a nice three-pronged kind of a shape to it.
Can you prune that?
Yes, that can be pruned. So geraniums, you know, they're pretty resilient. And if you're really afraid of it, it looks like it's got one main stem and two or three little stems coming off of there. You could just, you know, prune one of them back at a time and see what happens. What generally happens when you prune plants is that it stimulates growth below the cut.
Yep.
And so wherever you make your cut, you will see buds breaking. And with geranium, they respond very nicely to that, especially if they're it looks like it's in a really nice bright window.
Yeah.
And it's flowering, so it's obviously getting a fair amount of light. But it doesn't have a lot of foliage on it, and it is kind of tall and gangly. So I would say, you know, cut back one of those stems at a time if you're afraid to do that, and just, you know, see if you get some nice branch development below. But theoretically, you could cut that plant down to about 3 inches tall, and it will come back as long as you don't overwater it and you know, get into that root rot situation. So when you end up, you know, when you cut a plant back so severely, you have to remember that there's no foliage to transpire the water, and so you really have to stop watering it until you start to get foliage again.
We got an email from Wayne, who this goes back to the plant, transporting the plants into California.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I routinely have plants brought into California. However, there are restrictions. I live in the Bay Area and listening to us, as a matter of fact.
Wow, that's great.
But he says there, if you go to the State of California Department of Agriculture, there are guidelines
For bringing plants in.
So the California,
that makes sense.
Yeah, California Department of Agriculture, go there and you'll get some information on.
And what it may end up being, there may have a list of plants that you're just not allowed to bring in. And then others that maybe some they don't care as much about that they could do. That makes sense. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that suggestion. John in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, I'd like to ask Patty, what would be the best way to take cuttings off a really old, large Christmas cactus, and what would be the best type of potting soil to use for that, please?
You know, Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus, Easter cactus, they're all, you know, they're different species, but they're all in that same tropical cactus sort of family, and they all have the same modified stem arrangement, although they look a little bit different if you look at the stems very closely, but they all have joints on them. And so the joints are typically where the roots will arise, but you can get roots even from other parts of the stem segments. But what I like to recommend is, you know, if it's a really big plant, that you take, that you break off, you don't even have to cut it, but you just break off a section that's about 6 to 8 inches long, really no bigger than that. If it has flowers on it, remove the flowers when you do this. But it's really better to wait until it's done flowering before you start taking cuttings off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people, you know, they want to do it right now. You know, they're visiting their grandmother and their grandmother has a beautiful plant and they want a piece of it. So you can do it any time, but you need to take those flowers off if you're going to do the rooting. And then if you want the best success, you can use a rooting hormone powder that you can buy at any garden center. And they make one that has a fungicide in it to help reduce the chance of root rot. You can get a cactus, pre-mixed cactus soil that is 50% sand and 50% peat and compost. And put that in a small clay pot. You put the cutting directly into the sand and water it like one time and just wait. They root very easily. They don't, you know, you can do it even without the rooting hormone and they will root very nicely. Sometimes if people have really small segments, you can just kind of lay them on top of the soil, much like you do a jade leaf, and you can actually see the roots developing. But if you want to hasten the process and get a good outcome, the rooting hormone powder really helps.
Mm-hmm. There we go. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Onalaska. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Say, I'm trying to plant some blueberries. We have a place up by Hatfield and it's sandy, but I'm wondering is if can I buy a commercial blueberry and then plant them up there, or do I have to get a wild blueberry or somehow do that?
How you said your soil is sandy. Do you know what the pH of your soil is?
Well, I don't know, but it's got a lot of pine trees up there.
That's probably pretty acidic. Blueberries are one of those plants that have to have acidic soil. You know, they will do well if the pH is as low as, you know, 4.5. If the soil gets, if soil pH gets much above 5.5, 5.8, you know, they just do not thrive. So, you know, this, if you're going to invest in blueberries, you probably should make that $15 investment and get a soil test done through UW-Madison Soil Analysis Lab, just to make sure that the pH is good, for those plants. It may be if your soil is super sandy, you know, you might need to incorporate some compost or other organic matter before you plant them. But yeah, commercial varieties, if you're, it turns out that your soil pH is good for blueberries, yeah, there are a lot of commercial varieties available. And we have, you know, companies all over Wisconsin that will sell blueberries that are suitable for our climate.
Yeah, there are some good, obviously, some good greenhouses.
Right, and you know, they do a lot of blueberry production in parts of Minnesota and Michigan, and so as long as you're buying a northern-based cultivar, you should be fine.
Tell you what, they don't work so well in Madison.
No,
too alkaline. Too alkaline.
We have people in the southeast area who try to grow blueberries, and our soil, the pH is just so high. You know, they might look good the first year because they're still growing in their nursery pot soil. Yeah. But by year two, they're yellow. By year three, they're usually dead. It's just so disappointing.
Yeah, unless you're out there really working to acidify. And that's
hard.
So, that's hard to do.
Very hard work.
Very hard work. I finally gave up.
When you're in that part of Wisconsin that has a limestone base underneath the soil, trying to acidify your soil enough to grow blueberries is a little bit crazy.
I had some that I brought all the way from Bayfield, and I tried my best. But
I know people who've had success with them growing them in containers.
Yeah. Well, Patty, it's always a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
And we'll see you next year.
Wow. See you next year. I'm hoping 2014 will be a fabulous year.
I am too. Patty DeGuy, UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County, and you can bet that she will be with us in 2014. Monday at 11, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody talk about avoiding aches and pains when shoveling snow and trying to walk on those icy sidewalks. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.